The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Show called Mission Minded. It runs every single Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Central Time all over the Birmingham area. We got roughly 85% of our listening audience within 100 miles. We got people all over the United States and all over the world. And he is Michael Coleman. He is formerly, of course, the Jimmy Hill Mission, now with the Montgomery Food Bank. They cover 35 counties in the great state of Alabama. And I know he is. You're getting busy, aren't you, brother? I mean, you're always busy, but it is. It's eating time, brother.
Yeah, this time is always a huge challenge to make sure that. But the reality is, man, it just people who are battling food insecurity, this is where it gets all the attention. But really the tough times are summer times when kids are out of school and there's more burden on the household to make ends meet with the kids there, you know, eating three meals a day at home. So it's really just a challenge year round.
So how does the change during the holiday season? Because I mean, I would think that more people obviously are looking for food through Feeding America. And it's interesting because food is a necessity, right? So it's like, why would it increase during the holidays, knowing that you're probably serving the same families you were serving before? But I guess, do you have transients? Do you have people coming in asking for food at this point in time? And then in January they fall back out. How's that work?
No, it's pretty much, we have some agencies, you know, and agencies are just food pantries that we distribute out to, and they distribute out to their communities. And lots of times you'll have agencies that just really serve during the holidays.
Gotcha.
And they try to make, they try to ramp it up a little bit in terms of how special the meals are. So lots of times just day to day, we're trying to make sure that they have enough protein, they have enough produce, they have enough dairy, just all the things that they need, and trying to provide as balanced meals as possible. This time of year, we try to go all out and try to, you know, make sure that there's hams or turkeys, or, you know, that they have a plenty of food on the table for them and their families. And so you kind of target this time of year to try to make it as special as possible. And I know what some people may say as well. You know, people ought to be glad for whatever they get. And the truth of the matter is they are glad, but we won't, it's just part of the culture that in the food banking business that, you know, this is just because people are struggling. We don't want them to not have traditional holiday meals and them to celebrate with their families. And so, we try to make that become a reality as much as possible.
Keeping your mind, your mission, your mind. Michael Coleman for Mission Minded joins us here every single Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Central Time on Tony Curry Radio, the TKR app. Over 100,000 people have downloaded that app. And, of course, wherever you get your podcasts, we're available in every major industry. MIT Research has found the number one reason why people leave their jobs. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But we got some emails we haven't gotten to in the last few weeks because we've just been jibber-jabbers getting after it here. info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Radio.net. We actually have an email here from a Twitter employee who was laid off, who heard last week's show. We'll get to that in a second. But Jan in Knoxville wants to know, is there any difference in the hiring practices of a non-for-profit employee or a for-profit employee? It's an interesting question.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I will tell you that you usually say that there's not, in terms of maybe the questions you get asked. Mm-hmm. To me, the difference comes in the focus of the type of employee. So lots of times when you're talking for profit, you're looking for a particular skill set, and you recognize this person's not coming in because they love your company or whatever, you know, so they're coming in because they want to make the best living they can for their family. And nonprofit is a little bit different because you're really called into a servant position typically in a nonprofit. No matter what your skill level is, you have to keep in mind that you're ultimately there tackling a societal ill or societal problem, and you are there, and then there's a face of, so in the for-profit world, you've got customers and you're trying to lure those customers and you want them to have the best customer experience. Nonprofit world is a lot of the same way, except our customers are usually people who need something or need help. It's not something we're getting from them. So it's just a different dynamic. And so one of the things that typically I would ask in the nonprofit world is I just want to know what they know about the issues that we're dealing with, what their passion level is. Because I think I've said this many times on the show, you give me somebody that's got a passion for people in poverty or people battling brokenness or just struggling in life, and that's really where their heart is, I can teach them to do anything almost in food banking. So, but I need somebody that starts with that right heart, and you can't teach that heart. That heart's either there or it's not there. Yeah. And so I can have the smartest person in the world, but I don't want an organization full of smart people who don't really care and are willing to go the extra mile to make sure that we're adequately serving those in need. And so it's a little bit different of a mindset. You're going to get typically the same type of questions. What's your strengths? What's your weaknesses? You know, tell me about yourself. Where do you see yourself in 5? Just all those kind of normal questions. But I really personally just try to dig down and try to understand somebody's passion level, because that just tells me a lot about if they're going to be a good fit or not.
You know, the hiring practices, you're listening to Mission Minded with Michael Coleman. He's from the Montgomery Food Bank. And of course, you can always help them out. And you can actually go through our website and do that as well as TonyCurryRadio.net. The hiring practices a generation ago, Michael, was so different. You walked in with a resume. You probably looked at a newspaper in the employment section, or you knew a friend and how you got your job. And now there's so many different ways to get background checks and look into what people are, not only from a professional standpoint, but from a personal standpoint. When you hire somebody, regardless of where you're at, let's say, you know, obviously the Montgomery Food Bank is one example, but say you had a for-profit, maybe you ran a sandwich shop or something. What kind of background checks do you do in your employees? I mean, you could probably just dig until you couldn't dig anymore, but how far do you dig?
Yeah, we run background checks, and that's important, I think, because now, I will tell you this. I don't run background checks to exclude anybody. I'm a big second chance guy. If a guy's been in prison, it doesn't, you know, I'm all about, you know, giving them an opportunity to come work. But I do think it's important that people, that you understand that everything out there is fair game. So there's lots of companies who will spend a lot of time searching you out on Facebook and looking at all your Instagrams and all that. And I'll just give you one example. Back when I was doing workforce development, a lot of the people we were helping were coming out of poverty. Yep. And they would put, there was this one young lady who was in a relationship with another young lady, which that in and of itself is not an issue. But she was sitting there with her arms wrapped around her girlfriend, but she had 2 pistols in her hands.
Oh, jeez.
And so that was her cover page. And I'm like, well, you have to understand, you may have thought that's a cool pic, but you've put it out there as your profile picture. So anybody who goes is going to hire you says, wait a minute, here's somebody holding 2 45s or 2 9mm. And that's not somebody I want associated with my company. I mean, if I would have seen that, I would not hire somebody like that just because there's just all sorts of risk and all sorts of challenges with that. So, yeah, I mean, there's, but it was interesting. I was talking to a guy, a friend of mine, he's in a very large accounting firm. And I asked him, I hadn't been able to talk to him since COVID, just ask him about, you know, folks coming back to work. And he said, you know, Michael, it's so different. Cause back when we were hired and it was our first time, you know, at the accounting company, we were so scared we were going to lose our jobs, we would do anything they told us to.
Yeah.
So it was like, hey, you know, you're going to stay here all hours of the night. We, you know, we just said, hey, that's what you got to do to hold on to this job. And he said, now the culture is, people tell him all the time, you know, I really am not interested in working over 40 hours. And he's like, yeah, but we have these clients who demand, you know, X, Y, and Z. And a lot of that can't be fit. You know, they're going to have last minute requests. Just trying to explain the culture and the nature of accounting, and when you're doing a company's books, that lots of times it's a lot of late nights. And he says it's a real challenge today because people are like very ho-hum that they just don't have that same perspective when they come into the workforce. It's like, hey, I'm here, and this is what I demand. And you know, back when we were young, we didn't have any demands when we went in the workforce. We were just thankful to get a job and get in there, and whatever they told us to do, we sucked it up and did. And
sure,
he was just kind of lamenting a little bit that it's a whole different dynamic now.
Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Your email questions here from Mission Minded. It's Michael Coleman here. This kind of goes along with that. Jillian in Corner, Alabama, recently hired an employee for his business. Said the guy was doing a good job, and then he did some digging and found some nefarious things in his past. He didn't say exactly what those were. He wants to let him go, and he's saying that his HR department's saying, you may have a liability issue here. Does he have grounds? I'm not sure what he saw. I don't know if he saw pictures. Well, let's use this picture of these two females holding these guns as an example. You make a hire. She's doing a great job, and all of a sudden you're like, I don't want that to be the face of my business. What's your next step?
Well, in Alabama, it's a right to work state, which means in reality, you can fire somebody because you don't like the color of their shoes.
Okay.
I mean, you literally can do those kind of things, as with most right to work states. The challenge you find, though, is
And real quick, explain what right to work state means. What does that entail?
Yeah, so a right to work state is basically, I mean, the easiest way to distinguish it, that I distinguish it at least. I don't know if this is the formal meaning, but right to work state is basically whether it's unionized or not, or there's certain when you go in for a company that's unionized, and you can have even that whole state process behind it, unionization. I'm not going to explain this well, but they can't just fire you for anything. There's arbitration processes, and you have appeals, and you're protected. Even if a lot like you see in the education system, you can have a bad teacher, but it can be very difficult to get rid of that teacher because of the unionization and all of that. And that's not an anti-union statement. It's just there's more protections with unions for workers. Mm-hmm. But in right-to-work states, there aren't those protections. So you can be dismissed for almost any reason. Now, the one exception to that is if you're a special class, if you fall into a special or a protected class. And then, for instance, if you're a person of color, or you are a woman, or if you are special need, anything like that, you fall into a handicap, you fall into a protected class. If you cannot be dismissed, you cannot be fired due to that particular issue. In other words, I can't be racist and just fire you because you're black.
Yeah.
Or because you're Asian. I can fire you if I don't think you're doing a good job, but there's an arbitration process where you go to the EEOC and you can file a complaint and you say, I was fired because of this reason. And then the EEOC reaches out to you as a business. And this happens all the time. And then you can either go to mediation with that, or, you give your side. And then bottom line is they can sue you in federal court. They have to go through that EEOC process. We could do a whole show about that because I've been through that process several times. But bottom line is, unless you can prove that somebody's getting fired for a particular reason, then you have a lot of flexibility as an employer to be able to dismiss this person. Now, there's a separate question in that to me is it in that person's, is it in the best interest? Is it the right thing to do? Well, it's tough to say without knowing what that is. I know every person says, well, if this were found out by this boy, let's just say somebody is a sex offender, a registered sex offender, and they're concerned about how that will hurt their company name. I get that. It might be an opportunity to sit down and talk with that employee and help have a discussion about it. But again, the more you reveal to that employee, the more that information can be taken and used against you. So there's really no easy situations out there. You just have to use your best judgment as to, I would just caution, I would not fire somebody who was doing a good job just because they had something in their past.
Can you talk to them about it? Can you say, hey, listen, this is not a representative of what we want to do in our company. Is that okay? Or is that an issue as well? If you're going to keep them, right, you just let them go or what?
Yeah. So I'm just going to make up a scenario. Let's say, that it's a white female and let's say that, she puts these pictures out there of drinking. She's all tatted up, all those kind of things. And then I say, well, that's really not the image we want to project here, but I don't have that in my policy. She's not violated a written policy.
Mm-hmm.
She's just out there being her, and, you know, so she hadn't violated a policy. So I could be opening myself up for a charge of discrimination because based on the fact she's got a tattoo, yet I don't have it in my policy that we can't employ people with tattoos because of X, Y, and Z. So I'm saying,
yeah.
So if I call her in and talk to her about that and I tell her specifically, then I can't go back later and say, well, she wasn't a good employee. He brought up the fact that I had tattoos. And once you bring that up, that's why, they can then take that information. That might not be the reason you fire.
Yeah.
But if you ever bring it up and you have that conversation, and let's say she turns 2 months later and she stops doing a good job, then you're like, well, I'm going to let you go. You're not doing a good job. She's going to go back to EOC and say, well, he says I'm not doing a good job, but I'll tell you, 2 months ago he brought me in his office and was complaining about my tattoos. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the underlying issue. And so now they've got an actual issue that they can pursue in the litigation process.
This is a really, really broad question, and we can do an entire show on this as well. He's Michael Coleman from the Montgomery Food Bank. They cover 35 counties in the state, formerly the Jimmy Hill Mission. Great friend of the show, and just absolutely love having y'all mission-minded here. You can hear the show every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. and wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast, Curry with a K. Mike in Montgomery, simple question. Is Michael Coleman a union man? Before I get into your answer, it is strange because unions have fallen off quite a bit over the last 2 to 3 decades, and all of a sudden we're hearing about Starbucks trying to privatize. We've heard about Amazon trying to unionize. We've heard about Twitter, and we got an email from a former Twitter employee. We'll get into it in a second. Smart and the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen are obviously going through a strike right now through their union. What's your thoughts on the, not so much whether you're a union man, but the face of what unions are now as opposed to the way they were?
Yeah, so I know they're going I tend to not say I'm this or that because, yeah. And people are going to say, oh, he just wants to walk in the middle of the road, not take a stand. I've really gotten to the point in my life that almost no matter what the issue is, I try to really analyze it. And when I do that, I can say for sure that unions were desperately needed back in the day when workers were put in incredibly difficult and unsafe work conditions, just brutalized and not paid what they, you know, enough to put food on their table. Unionization really helped give the employees some ability to push back against that and at least earn living wages. So at one time, I mean, I went back and studied that issue, and I was really, if you just look at that, you're very pro-union. Now, in our day and time, we feel like, well, it's not as necessary. And when you look at a lot of the history of unions, you see a lot of corruption. You see a lot of politicization of issues and candidates and spending a lot of union dues, not on making better workers, but putting the people they want in politics in there. And that's really kind of what it's turned into, is you want to lobby for people who are going to put pro-union policies into place. I would say today, I've seen some unions do a lot of harm. And I would tell you, I see that particularly in the education system, where you have teachers. And I have a lot. First of all, I have mad respect for teachers. My wife is a teacher. Both my daughters are teachers. One at a college level, one at a elementary level. A lot of teachers in my family just have mad respect for for what they do every day. But I know, just like anywhere, you've got some really good teachers and you've got some really poor teachers. And when you can't get rid of a really poor teacher because of X, Y, and Z, not because, you know, that because they need to, they're harmful to the kids when they're not doing it for the right reason, or they're not able to accomplish what they're supposed to as a teacher, and you get to where you can't, you just have to move them around in the system because you can't, because of union protection or whatever, or tenure, you can't get rid of them. I think I tend to look at the children who end up having to sit a year under that poor teacher, and they already have so many disadvantages, oftentimes inner city schools with poverty and just challenges. And I think how unfair it is to subject them to those things. And the only reason this person is still a teacher is because she has union protections.
Yeah.
So let me say this. I've also seen, you know, like you've talked about, you've seen all sorts of stories about Amazon warehouse workers having to pee in a bottle because they can't get a break long enough to, you know, and working them 12 hours straight. And you think that's not a good culture either. I mean, it's driven by money. And so maybe a union in that case might be good because it's such an unhealthy culture. So my answers are never simple, like simple yes or no. I think unions can be very productive still and very useful in the right situations. I don't think everything needs to be unionized, though, because there's also abuses in the unionization process.
No, I think you said it best, and I don't think there is a right or wrong answer, and I think that we needed unions in this country because you had guys working 7 days a week for 12 hours a day, and it just wasn't fair, and they were making no money in the coal mills or whatever, wherever it was. It was interesting. We actually did, when I was on the opening drive with Alan Jay, we actually did a remote for a union in Tuscaloosa, and I don't want to mention who it was, and we were made honorary union members. We got jackets the whole nine yards, and I remember going into the union president's office, and it was, I almost felt like it was the mob. They were like, okay, he'll see you now. And I was like, okay. And we walked in the office. They closed the door. He's behind his desk smoking a cigar. And I know this is stigmatizing, but I'm just telling you what I saw. And it was interesting because we were doing a remote that they paid like $6,000 or $7,000 for. It wasn't a remote where they were selling anything. It was just for the union. They just liked our morning show. And so they brought us in. And on that particular day, it was like 3 days before Christmas, they were laying off like 200 guys. And so guys were coming into work and seeing their name on this list on the wall, and they're being laid off. And yet they just spent $6,000 on a morning show remote. I still have the stuff they gave me, but I was kind of like, wow, this is kind of strange. It was kind of bizarre. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. I do want to get into this number one reason for leaving a job. You want to do a couple more emails though, because they're very topical.
Sure. You tell me. I'll let you lead. I'll follow.
Yeah, because we just did a show on Elon Musk. It was a great show. If you missed it, go check out Mission Minded with Michael Coleman, Tony Curry Radio Podcast, and listen to our Elon Musk. We went 30 minutes on Elon and what kind of guy he is. Is he a leader? Is he a blowhard? Is he going to turn this thing around with Twitter? Skippy, who works for Twitter, he didn't want to mention where he works, said he heard a show. Excuse me. And he said he's taking the high road despite the fact that he was laid off. He said, I trust my skill set. I know I was very good at what I did. I'm not sure why I was laid off, but I know I'll find another job. And he said, I'm also hoping that maybe Elon Musk will see the fact that I have not crashed back at him, and perhaps he will give me my job back when the time is right. I thought that was very interesting. You got anything you want to mention on that?
No, but I think that's definitely look, I've been on the bad end of a separation before, and it's just human nature. You want to lash out. You feel hurt. It's just human nature. So I think that's incredibly that's a really good sign. Skippy, that he's not willing to do that. And I know he's doing it because he hopes to get his job back, but still, there's some people that would just blow that situation up altogether. And Let me tell you, if you go on social media and blast your employer, you may think you're just blasting your employer, but it's a lot of people who otherwise might hire you that sees that and goes, that regardless of who was at fault, he blew this situation up when he left, and they don't want that same kind of thing happening at their company. So it actually can hurt you getting in with other companies when they see that. So I think that's exactly the right perspective to take.
I want you to pretend this next email from Pam in Cleveland is one of your employees and you're her boss, okay?
Okay.
She says she works in an all, and this is really interesting, and I think a lot of women have to deal with this, and she doesn't know what quite to do. She works at an all-male firm. She doesn't say what kind of firm it is. Despite never being touched or anything said to her, and she considers herself, she said, I am attractive and I take care of myself. She feels like she gets stared at and looked at a lot. And she said she pretty much can't go anywhere in the office without having three or four guys constantly around her. And it makes her feel uncomfortable, but she doesn't know what to do because she really has nothing concrete to complain about because no one touches her and no one says anything nasty to her. Well, if she came to you, what would you say?
Yeah, so I would say I'm sure that firm has an HR department, and not that you file a complaint, but I think if you go talk to your HR and you share just that circumstance. So when I've had HR people, if my HR came in and said, "Hey, I just want to tell you this," and then if that were me, and I would say, "Well, I'm concerned about that," so I would likely call her in, let her know, number one, that I cared about this issue and that she was uncomfortable, and then talk to her about potential solutions. Like, am I guilty of that? There mm-hmm. may be lots of times, you know, a lot of people, it's not an excuse at all, but a lot of people sometimes just they'll gravitate to the opposite sex, somebody they're attracted to, and not necessarily with any intention in mind. It's just that's how they do it. And so they may be lacking self-awareness. So I think if the company's culture is correct, in my opinion, if you were to take that issue, again, not blowing it up, but just saying, hey, you know, I get looks, there's a lot of people around me. And it's not always it's not for professional reasons. Then I'm starting to get a little concerned about it. Let the HR talk to the CEO and see what changes. If nothing changes, if the CEO blows it off, then first of all, that probably gives you some perspective about the culture of that company. And it may be a company that you say, hey, I can't see a future here with a company who would be willing to handle a sensitive situation like that. But given how sensitive things are today, my guess is that most leaders are willing to step up and address that issue, or at least have HR put out a memo to everybody as a reminder to, you know, keep your personal, you know, give, don't get in other people's personal space. Be mindful of what you're saying and what you're doing and the vibe you're sending off. And just see if things begin to change. If they don't, then you can always go back and file a more serious complaint, not even necessarily a more formal complaint, but like a, hey, I brought this up very subtly. Things aren't changing. I'm still concerned. So this is the second time I'm bringing it up. I'm not going to let the issue die until it's addressed. And look, I'm not demanding anything. I just wanted to feel, you know, safe and comfortable in my work environment.
Yeah, you know, and I'll speak for all guys because I am a guy. I think there's this thought process that because a woman takes care of her body and she can't help that she's attractive, right? She was born that way. That every woman wants to be looked at. Like they want to be appreciated, and guys are kind of stupid that way. We just think that they're always dressing for us, and they're not. And I mean, right. There's a difference between catching a quick glimpse and staring, and always. And we had a salesperson up at the radio station, And it got so bad that, the boss even told her to get there a little earlier in the morning, because when she got there early, everyone else showed up on time. And yeah, she goes straight to the coffee pot, and there'd be all six guys would show up to work on time. Yeah. Otherwise, they were getting in late. If she was sick, everyone would come traipsing in at 9 o'clock. And it was just, it was kind of pathetic, because guys can be pathetic that way. We are visual animals. I get that. We got the lizard brain, and we do like to look. But just because a woman is beautiful doesn't mean she wants to be looked at. Some do. But a lot don't.
And that's right. And we just have to have enough self-awareness to, and lots of times it's things that guys have to just come, hey dude, you know, you're crossing some kind of line, but you don't, you know, it's tough. Guys get pressured to not be that guy. You want to be one of the cool guys, which means, you know, you can have conversations, but the truth of the matter is I don't think anybody, in that environment, you want to believe that somebody's not willing to go too far if she puts up a clear boundary.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, you can start off subtly and see if that works. I'm sure it'll work with some. There may be a couple that really feel like, oh, that doesn't really apply to me. You go back and you maybe that time you drop a name or two to HR and say, look, again, I'm not filing a formal complaint, but I will tell you something else I would recommend as well. Is that make sure that you document every time you try to address this issue, either with an individual, with your boss, or with HR, is that you need to document that the date, the time, what was said, and then what was done, and how you followed up. And the reason is because you just don't know what people will do, and it's possible that you could come back all of a sudden and your services are no longer needed. And then you would have to ask yourself, well, wait a minute, everything was going fine, and now I said a couple of things about that, and now I'm out of a job. That's why the EEOC and places like that are in place, is to prevent those kind of things, like from being able to call women in saying, hey, you either play along or, you know, we're going to move you along to another job. It's those kind of protections. They're necessary. I know people who, you know, have gotten fired because of a certain political persuasion or a feelings about one race or the other. And so we need the EEOC for genuine protections, but just like it is with everything, you know, this is here to do good things, but then there's people who get fired and they don't want to look at their own behavior, so they use that as a weapon to get back at their boss and try to sue. So just like with everything, you know, it's good intentions, but there are people who are problematic, but I certainly would try to solve it at the lowest level possible. But if that doesn't work, just keep elevating it until you get satisfaction, because you should not have to deal every day in an environment that makes you uncomfortable.
I hate documentation.
Oh, I did too.
I've heard that a lot from my lawyer. Get documentation. I'm like, oh gosh, here we go with documentation. Hey, Michael, great show. We didn't get to the MIT stuff. We'll do that next week.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll talk about the toxic culture of what's happening in a lot of workplaces right now and get your thoughts on too. Great emails today. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Have yourself a great week. We'll catch up with Mission Mind next week, okay?
All right, you too.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.